Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sal Licata Show podcast, available every weekday, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Sam Darnold is a Super Bowl champion. And I think a lot of the sentiment has been from the Jet fan perspective. You know, obviously it's great anytime the Patriots lose a game or lose the Super Bowl. So that's great. And they have the most losses in Super Bowl history. Yeah, well, that happens by being in there quite a bit. But I think the sentiment overall is that, well, Sam Darnold's a good guy. And you feel bad for him, the way that things went with the Jets. And then he had to bounce around multiple different spots, you know, multiple spots. And then he goes and wins the Super Bowl, so you feel good for him. But both can be true. Whereas a Jet fan, you can be thrilled with Sam Darnold winning his Super Bowl. And not only winning the Super Bowl, beating the Patriots in the process, exercise the demons, exercising those demons and the ghosts and all those different things, but also look to the ineptitude and can't help but feel frustrated that your own team just doesn't know what they're doing. Because the whole, like think about this for 20, 30 years, however long this may be going back with the Jets. Obviously, it's a long time since Joe Namath, we know that. But I'm just saying overall, in the more recent years, where it's become all about drafting and developing the young quarterback, right? That's the primary thing in today's NFL. And when I say today's NFL, I mean 10, 15, 20 years, whatever it's been. Really, to me, like it goes back to, I'd say, 2009. It's either 2008 or 2009 was really the first year where you saw rookie quarterbacks, Flacco and Matt Ryan, have success. 2008 it was, if I'm not mistaken. 2008, Matt Ryan, Joe Flacco. Two rookie quarterbacks drafted, and both had immediate success. Since then, you've seen that slowly but surely. And now it's like, draft a quarterback, boom, put him in there. If he's either the guy or he's not, like right away. So it was always chasing a lot of teams, specifically the Jets in this case, chasing that quarterback. Got to draft him. Got to draft the right guy. Draft him and develop him. Got to do that. Got to do it. Well, they actually did it this time. Maccagnan identified the right guy. Traded up to get him, they drafted a guy who would eventually go on to win the Super Bowl. Think of how many years we sat back and said, oh, if they only had Lamar Jackson, oh, if they only had Josh Allen, like all these different things. Oh, man, I wish Baker Mayfield would have been there. And yet it's Sam Darnold, who's the first one standing of that great quarterback group to hoist the Lombardi Trophy. So the Jets, this is how bad the Jets are as an organization. Not to reiterate it, like we all know it. But I think the feeling, as opposed to being happy for Sam Darnold, the feeling should also be annoyance at the ineptitude of the Jets and frustration in that, well, they could actually do the thing that's the hardest thing to do by identifying and drafting the right quarterback that could go win a Super Bowl. If they could do that and still not have it result in success for them, how would you have any hope moving forward? So you identify that guy. They did all the right things, and they just didn't put him in a position to succeed. And they continue to make the same mistakes over and over and over again. Why would you think that that is ever going to change under the ownership of Woody Johnson? The answer is you wouldn't. You have to hope that it's going to. Hope against what you know at your core is just never going to change. Even the first year with Aaron Glenn, you want to think that everything's going to be different and they're setting a new foundation. And then that turned into a disaster. The offseason's been a disaster. Look, I want to see the Jets have as much success as anybody. Rooted for them in the, you know, after they got Parcells in 97, rooted for them again with Rex Ryan in the championship games. I like Mangini even before that. I wish that I could have real reason to believe that the Jets were going to be able to figure their way out of this. But when you do the rare thing of identifying and drafting a quarterback, I mean, think about it. Joe Namath, Sam Darnold, all those Jet fans, suck for Sam, this or that. You guys were right. You were right. Sam Darnold was the guy. Suck for Sam. Go get Sam. Right, they didn't even suck it up for Sam. They had to trade up to get him, but they got him. All that thinking, that mindset, that was right. Eventually, for those of you who wanted him and saw him as winning a Super Bowl one day, loved what you saw at a USC, loved the makeup, loved the potential, the mobility, the arm, all those different things. You were right. He is a Super Bowl winner. But it's got to make you sick to your stomach that he's winning or won a Super Bowl with another franchise. And look at the franchise that he wins with. You know, this is the larger point, because a lot of me was thinking about, okay, well, this year in the NFL, the main theme was there really was no dominant team, right? It was a lot of parity in the league. That was a word that I kept using and thinking about week to week. Man, who the hell knows? This is chaos here. Like, picking these games, betting on these games, the expectations, like, you just don't know week to week. Unlike any other year that I can remember, the NFL, it's kind of wide open. Some people like it, some people don't. But is it really, when you think about the two franchises that we saw participate in Super Bowl 60, where Seattle has had a long, long run of sustained success, where Pete Carroll comes in, stabilizes the entire program, obviously gets them to the incredible heights, being in the Super Bowl, winning a Super Bowl, being at multiple Super Bowls, and then had, all right, one year under 500, and then you can start to see it go the other way a little bit, where 9-8 or, you know, right around 500. They make a change. They go to McDonald. They identify the right young head coach. Doesn't matter if he's offensive or defensive. Clearly, they identify the right head coach. That's a well-run organization. Give everybody credit from the top down. They move on from a legend who built the sustained success, bring in a guy, McDonald, who they believe in can be a very young Super Bowl winning head coach, but a young guy who's going to get the program to another level after Carroll did it. And here we are when he's done it. But it's not like he built this thing out of the abyss and had to come in and totally rebuild it. That is not the case. And even for New England, where it was more of a rebuild, Belichick's last year, 4-12, Mayo takes over, 4-12, but it really wasn't that bad. Look at their run of sustained success. I mean, unmatched. The dynasty that was built before that, and even in before Belichick's final year, there was still a team that was hovering around 500, right there. Whether 1 year they're under 500, 1 year they're over 500. One bad year, and it's like, oh, okay, well, everybody's got to go, and everything's got to get fixed. But another organization, give Kraft and everybody else credit there, where now they got lucky that they were bad enough to land on Drake May. But even he, like, there's no guarantee that Drake May is going to be some stud. And he's not the reason why they're in the Super Bowl. I mean, he helped them along, obviously, with an MVP-type season. But it's more about everything else. The infrastructure was in place. If Vrabel's not some magician, so Vrabel comes in and takes over a program that outside of a couple of years had the ultimate level of sustained success, and then gets them back into a Super Bowl. Now, would they have been in the Super Bowl if not for the way that things went for Kansas City? I know the league is designed. The league right now is designed to have the teams that fail, you know, like this year, to be better next year because of the schedule, you know, draft picks, obviously, schedule, obviously, that helps. So the league is designed to create more competitive balance and more parity. However, in the case of both the Seahawks and Patriots, I don't believe that that's the reason why they're here magically because of parity in the NFL. I just think that you have two franchises that have been premier franchises over the last two decades plus and found their way through the weeds in what was a jumbled mess in both the NFC and AFC, even if they weren't clearly the best teams all year long. It wasn't an accident. Now, would I bet that, and I like the idea of parity, but this is, to me, more about building a sustainable, successful organization that can go beyond franchise quarterbacks and all-time great head coaches. And that's exactly what happened in both these cases. Russell Wilson, greatest quarterback in Seahawks history. They win a Super Bowl with Sam Darnold. Tom Brady, greatest quarterback ever that ever lived. They get to a Super Bowl shortly thereafter with Drake May. Vrabel instead of Belichick. McDonald instead of Carroll. It's more, this is less about just flukiness and parity and more about organizations who know what they're doing, which is why you could tie it into the Jets and Giants here. You know, it's not just, well, the Giants have Jackson Dart and the league is wide open. And if one team was 4-12 the year before, why can't they be in the Super Bowl? It doesn't work like that. And it takes years to build a sustained, successful football program. Years to do that. The Giants may be closer than the Jets because they have some pieces in place. Obviously, Jackson Dart, led by Harbaugh, a great head coach himself. But these things take a long time to build a winning culture. The Jets, I hate to say it, I just don't see a way out for the Jets. It's been forever. You have to hope that somehow you know, they keep Aaron Glenn. They have some success next year. They bring in, you know, Muji brings in the right players, competitive players, gets rid of that toxic nature, even though there's talent or there was talent, get rid of that toxic nature and develop into a sustainable, successful organization, and then hope to put the cherry on top with the Super Bowl. It's not just about finding the savior. The Giants tried it with Jackson Dart, and we'll see. And I was getting texts last night from Giant fans, and people have said this too. I'd rather have Jackson Dart than Drake May. Oh, Drake May, he may never be back. Yeah. Oh, he's reached the ceiling. Yeah, ceiling is in the Super Bowl in year two. Yeah, it's a pretty good ceiling. How about Jackson Dart play a full season first? Can we get there? Like, actually let him take every snap under center for a full season. Then maybe we could talk. Oh, my God. So it's not just about chasing the quarterback and looking for the savior through the draft. The Jets have done it. They did it the right way with Sam Darnold, identifying the right quarterback, identifying, drafting him, bringing him in, couldn't develop him, and that's the biggest part. But it's more than just that. Same thing with the Giants. You could say, well, they identified the right quarterback now with Jackson Dart, which we don't even know if that's going to be the case. But now they have to actually develop him, and then they have to have the sustained success. And you look at this, and I know a lot of people were talking about this too last night, where, okay, will, so Drake May had an MVP-like year, stud, everybody in New England loves him, the next Tom Brady. There are no guarantees that he's ever going to be back. And it's not just because of his play, but I don't look at Drake May and say, oh my God, this is an absolute stud. He's going to be in the Super Bowl with regularity. Like, you realize, and nobody wants to acknowledge this, but it is true, how much luck goes in everything. Like, do you think Drake May is a better quarterback than Josh Allen? Do you think Sam Darnold is a better quarterback than Josh Allen? I'll give you my answer. I don't. I don't think Sam Darnold or Drake May are anywhere near as good as Josh Allen. The Bills have had a sustained run of success. Unfortunately, luck did play a part. Now, it's some of it's their own fault, whether it's McDermott not being good enough, whether it's Allen in certain spots not being good enough, not building a well-balanced team. But think about it. Maybe this year worse than anything, where the window was wide open for them. If you could get Drake May and the Patriots into the Super Bowl, then why not the Bills? But I don't believe Drake May is better than Josh Allen, and I don't believe that Sam Darnold is, and yet those two got to a Super Bowl before he did. So there are no guarantees. You also look at the landscape of things in the AFC. I mean, that is a... I'm watching that game yesterday, and I picked the Patriots. I thought the Patriots were going to win, and I don't care that they lost. Like, I hated them. I actually won money yesterday because I had the Knicks. We'll get to the Knicks in a second. But I hope the Patriots never get back to a Super Bowl. But I'm watching that game thinking that, man, you can think, if you're a Patriot fan or a believer in Vrabel or Drake May, you can think, nah, that's all right. We'll be back here again. It is impossibly hard to go through the entire regular season, go through the gauntlet of a postseason, and be one of the last two teams standing. It's just a lot of teams get there, never get back. Players fortunate enough to get there, never get back. So there are no guarantees. I don't care how early on it is in somebody's career. But, I mean, if I had to bet on it right now, I'd bet against rather than for, just because of how difficult it is. And you can say the same thing for Sam Darnold, but it doesn't matter for him, because he at least got his one, and that's all it takes. McDonald forever will be a Super Bowl champion head coach. Darnold forever will be a Super Bowl champion quarterback. And the Jets forever will be a mess. And the Giants, until proven otherwise in recent years, they got to get themselves out of it. You know, think about this. We're talking about, will the Patriots be back in the Super Bowl? And yet in New York, it's like, well, the Giants could be in the Super Bowl next year. Think about that. And there's hope for the Jets. You know, maybe the Jets could get it turned around. I don't know. Patriots are 4-12. Not so fit. The Jets are at best years out. Years. Giants, you can make a little bit more of a case, but I wouldn't hold my breath. You know, my favorite part of the Super Bowl yesterday was the Bad Bunny performance at halftime. And before I give you my thoughts on it, I'd just like to say, as somebody who does not do political stuff at all, this is not political by me in any way, shape, or form. But I miss the days where we can rip apart or love a Super Bowl performance without it being political. It should be fun. I'm allowed to love Bad Bunny's. And you know what's sad? A part of me felt like, wow, can I love this? Can I like this? Meaning I know I could feel how I feel, but I don't know if I'm allowed to say it. Like, am I allowed to like this, or is it going to be a political thing, which I want nothing to do with? And then I said, you know what? This is ridiculous. We've been talking about halftime shows forever as it pertains to the Super Bowl. And I myself, who I'm not the biggest Bad Bunny fan, meaning like I don't own any of his music. Although I guess nowadays, who buys music anyway? Like, I have Apple Music, so I own everybody's music on there. Here's my extent of knowing Bad Bunny. There is an episode of The Simpsons on Disney Plus that my daughter must have stumbled across. I don't even know if it's like a real episode or like a music video that features Bad Bunny, a cartoon Bad Bunny, and she loves the song. So, and this is going back like a year ago, and she was just wrapped in it, and that's how I became familiar with Bad Bunny, the music artist. I've seen him do some wrestling stuff, and obviously I know who he is, actor, all that stuff. But I was open to see the performance, just like I would judge any other performance. And I thought it was fantastic. I was entertained by it. Okay, I don't understand Spanish, but I mean, come on, who are we kidding? Half the time, these guys go up there that are speaking English, I don't know what the words are either. Rapper, rocker, I have no idea what the words are. Let's not pretend that we know every single word to every single song. You can't. You go to a concert, blah, 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 like you can't hear anything what these guys are saying in the microphone. All of them. Rock, rap, doesn't matter. So what? Now all of a sudden it's like, well, I didn't understand what he's saying. Oh, I can't enjoy music. You feel music. Music is a feel. It makes you move. Bad Bunny made me want to get up. Now, I didn't do it, but he made me want to get up out of my seat and dance. And it was more than just that. It was a whole performance. Visually, watching him walk through the grass the way that he did, the different stops, I thought it was great. Not only did I think it was great, I thought it was one of the best, most memorable halftime performances I've ever seen. I went to a Super Bowl. Super Bowl 42, first one, Patriots-Giants. Giants upset the previously undefeated Patriots. And I had this conversation, I think, with Bada Booms a week ago. Like, the only thing I remember about that performance-wise, you know, outside of the plays that Eli made to win, Alicia Keys was there. And I was like, did she do halftime? Maybe not. I had to go back and look it up and see who performed at that Super Bowl halftime. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And I'm all about Tom Petty, like whatever, Last Dance with Mary Jane. I remember watching that video growing up. But though I remember in those days being like, come on, man. Can we get some modern acts here that everybody can get involved with? And then slowly, now this is going back to, that's 2007. So since then, you know, Bruno Mars or Katy Perry or Lady Gaga, like mega stars. That's what I'm talking about. And that's what Bad Bunny is. So now I loved it and thought it was entertaining. Okay. I watched it twice. There's not anything else about that Super Bowl that I would go back and watch again, except that halftime performance. As a matter of fact, I liked it so much that not only will I be open to listening to Bad Bunny music, I'm curious to listen to it and have it translated so I can understand the words. Because I saw one clip last night with something that was very powerful. And, you know, I'm here because I never stopped believing in myself. And you should not. Like, those are important messages that he's getting out. Not to mention the unity and all those different things. Like, I don't know how you could watch that performance and think that he's anti-America. But again, I'm not trying to get political. I don't know the politics behind it. I'm going based off of it seemed to me like a performance that was trying to unify, not to mention that Jessica Alba was there. And Jessica Alba, come on. I spotted her in the crowd. I didn't even know that it was Ricky Martin. Somebody had told me that was Ricky Martin. I had no idea that was him. I saw it twice. I didn't know that was Ricky Martin. He looks nothing like him. Like, I think Ricky Martin, I'm thinking Livin' La Vida Loca. That did not look anything like Livin' La Vida Loca, Ricky Martin. But Jessica Alba, I could spot her from anywhere. Half paying attention. Wait a second, was that Alba? Goodness gracious. And, I mean, she wasn't alone. It was a tremendous performance, if you know what I mean there, by Bad Bunny. Some crew. Anyway, I like that performance so much that I'm more inclined now to go listen to his music and try to understand it and have it maybe transcribed or, you know, the interpretation on Apple Music, whatever you could get from him. But I loved it. And with that being said, if you hated it, you're allowed to hate it. I really don't care. Just like you shouldn't. Oh, Sal loved the Bad Bunny performance. Die. That's why you got fired from WFAN. I tweeted a joke on X last night saying that I don't speak Spanish, but Bad Bunny speaking my language. Or I don't understand Spanish, Bad Bunny speaking my language. And I meant that for a lot of different reasons. You can feel one way, I can feel another. And guess what? We can coexist. I can love Bad Bunny or love the performance. You can hate it. I'm not going to say you're a loser and a moron because you hated it. I don't care. To each their own. You're entitled to not like it if you don't want to. I liked it. I thought it was entertaining. As for the Knicks, we'll get Bada Booms in here in a second. We had an eventful weekend together. As for the Knicks yesterday, or on Sunday against the Celtics, now, we didn't react to the game that they got destroyed with against the Pistons on Friday night. But, and just let it go. They were banged up. You got to move on. Although the Pistons do scare me when you project forward here with the Knicks. Here's the thing that drove me nuts. Well, before I get to the thing that drove me nuts about the Knicks, it was a tremendous performance. I told you, I was in the Super Bowl field yesterday, ordered some food early, wanted to watch the Knicks. I threw a little parlay in with the Knicks. Jalen Brunson to hit four or more threes. Jalen Brunson to go over 29 points. Knicks to win. Boom, boom, boom. So that felt good. I had the Patriots, so I didn't cash in the second leg of some of those parlays. But anyway, I felt good about the Knicks and a big bounce back performance, and you saw that. Diwara, tremendous effort from him. Maybe he can be a player that could be helpful here. Alvarado, you saw the impact that he could have. His feistiness, clearly a professional, bringing the ball up. He's confident as anything, which you love in a big spot, tight possession. You need that without Jalen Brunson on the floor. So you love his intensity, the intangibles, the feistiness, defensive, all those different things, ball handling, all those different things from Alvarado. Brunson's a star, we know that. Okay, so here's the and you're not going to go nuts over it's a good win. That's a big win on the road against the Celtics, similar record to the Knicks. I don't care how banged up they are. The Knicks are banged up too. It's a big win. It's a good win for the Knicks. The issue I have, two things. Number one, the Hakimich stuff. Again, I'm not talking about it against the Celtics on a Sunday afternoon. I'm talking about it as it pertains to the playoffs. And the Hakimich thing is a problem. One of your best defenders and best rebounders, who is a game changer. Frank Isola was on with us last week, said that he believes the Knicks can win a championship because of Mitchell Robinson. And we're talking about even without Giannis, can the Knicks win the championship? Frank said yes, and he went on to explain because of Mitchell Robinson and the difference maker that he can be. With that being said, when he's on the floor, he's a liability because you can't have the Hakimich. He's not going to hit his free throws. It's preventing your offense from either getting in rhythm, from having the most success that they possibly can, meaning coming away with two or three points each possession. That it's a liability. We saw it a year ago. It's going to continue to be an issue for the Knicks that they're going to have to overcome, and it's not going to be easy. And maybe the biggest liability, and this is a major issue for me, I can't stand watching Karl-Anthony Towns with the ball down low in the paint. I can't stand it. It's the same thing every time. He's out of control. He gets on, like, his mindset is like, he gets frustrated because it's an offensive foul the first time, or somebody knocks the ball away from him the second time. Then he gets frustrated to try to prove his point, and he thinks he's a running back, and he tries to carry the ball to the rim and force his way down there. And more often than not, it's an offensive foul or it's a turnover. He is a sloppy mess. That has been consistent. I don't know about his whole career because I haven't watched him his whole career. With the Knicks, it has been consistent with him, which is why I wanted him to play more on the perimeter. I'd rather call Anthony Towns, set up on the perimeter, and shoot, because that's what he could do. A legit big that could stretch the floor. One of the Knicks' best three-point shooters. They have a few, but he's one of the better ones. That's what I would rather see, as opposed to feeding him down low where his game is out of control. Now, sometimes he has success, and it makes you wonder, oh, man, if we could just do that more consistently. Oh, man, that was really good. Other times, the majority of the time, and even for me, it's if it happens twice, really if it happens once, it's once too many, but you give him a little bit of a break. All right, offensive foul or turnover, it happens, whatever. But it continues to happen. And there was a sequence yesterday where it happened three times in a row. Three times in a row. It's like he's determined. Yeah, I respect the determination. Just give the ball up, man. Kick the ball outside. Stomp. It's infuriating watching him. That's a problem moving forward. It's been a problem. It will continue to be a problem. With that said, hey, Knicks have as good a chance outside of the Thunder as anybody else to be a championship team. It's the most talented Knicks team that I've ever seen. Doesn't mean they're going to win a championship. It's the most talented Knicks team that I've ever seen, even with the deficiencies, even with the flaws. We're grading this team now on a championship level. So when you see the little things like the Hakimich, when you see the little things again, maybe not so little, but the Karl-Anthony Towns out of control, throwing bows and not being able to control the basketball or his body on the offensive end, those are things that could come back to bite them in the end. One more note from sports before I bring in Bada Booms and we get to the week and get some thoughts with him here, some of his thoughts. You know, I also posted yesterday on X. I was watching SNY Mets posted a video of Luis Robert and all the great plays, defensive plays that he made a year ago. And he was making these plays against certain expected batting average, if that's your thing, whatever. But what you can see clearly is a high-end, legitimate, big league defensive player. A Gold Glove caliber center fielder. He's won a Gold Glove before. And I posted, like, I don't care if he hits a buck 90 with a glove like that. And then naturally people go nuts. Oh, no. Oh, my God. Can't hit a buck 90. You guys are missing the point. First of all, you're taking it way, way, way too literally. Obviously, like, you think I want to see Luis Robert hit a buck 90? Do I want to see that? No, I don't. What I'm saying is he's not. This is the way to say it so maybe everybody can understand. Because I forget how people sometimes lack comprehension on social media. They take things too literally. Forget that. So when I say if he hits 190, I wouldn't care. Obviously, I'd rather see him hit 260 or even 220, which he's hit the last couple of years. No matter what he hits, every time he steps into the batter's box, he's more of a threat than Tyrone Taylor. That was another thing. Yeah. Well, if that's the case, if you don't care that he hits 190, well, why don't you just have Tyrone Taylor? A, because he's a better defensive player. B, because he's a threat in the batter's box more than Tyrone Taylor. Do you not understand that? Do you not, like, is that too hard to understand? Oh, why not just have Tyrone Taylor? Because he's not the threat that Robert is. It's not that hard to understand, guys. Come on, wake up. Wake up. Feisty today. People frustrating me on social media. Wake up. I don't want him to hit 190, and he's not Tyrone Taylor. But if he does hit 190, as long as he plays Gold Glove defense, the Mets are going to be okay. He's not here for his bat. He's here for his glove. The bat is a bonus. Anything they get offensively from Luis Robert, and it's going to be more than anything they've gotten from any center fielder that they've had since Carlos Beltran. It's going to be more than that. Anything they get offensively is a bonus. He's going to hit down in the order, I don't know, 8, 9, something like that, maybe 7. To start. I have no idea how they're going to work it exactly. He's going to be in the bottom of the order. But he's a power threat and a guy who has proven that he can have an offensive game. It's been a struggle the last couple of years. His floor, I said 190 for effect. His floor has been 220-ish. Career average around 260. Floor, consistently last couple of years, 220. You take that. So was I exaggerating a bit with the 190? Maybe. Again, I don't want him to hit 190. I don't expect him to hit 190. But if he plays Gold Glove defense in center field and saves runs the way that he's been saving runs, I don't care if he hits 190. Ray Ordonez is one of my favorite players of all time. He had no stick, all glove. I respect that. Up the middle specifically. It's something the Mets needed. So calm down with your, he's Tyrone Taylor. He's not Tyrone Taylor. He's better. He's better. It's not the same thing. Tyrone Taylor isn't a threat, and I like him. He isn't a threat when he steps into the batter's box. He's a solid fourth or fifth outfielder. Can play multiple positions, maybe grind out on the bat, put the bat on the ball, give you a big base hit in a big spot. He's not the threat that Luis Robert Jr. is. Not even close. I don't want him to hit 190, but I want him to play Gold Glove defense, which he will do. It was a great move for the Mets bringing him in. There's no risk as long as he plays great defense like that. Now, if the defense falls off, here's the opposite side of that. I don't care if he hits 260, 270. If he doesn't play Gold Glove caliber defense, that's a problem. Bada Booms and I met for the first time this weekend, and we went to 80s WrestleCon. Bada Booms, you want to give your thoughts on what we witnessed? Well, first of all, it was nice to meet you in person. You maybe a little bit bigger than I thought, like tall wise. How tall are you? Is your mic on?
Yeah. No, I know you're doing there. How tall are you? I know what you're doing there.
No. I'm saying height wise.
I believe 5'10".
That's it?
I didn't think I was that tall. I think you're gassing me a little bit.
No, I'm 5'10 too, but I felt like you were bigger.
I didn't say anything mean about you on Twitter. What did I walk into here?
No. No, I'm saying, like, you had a big presence to you. But anyway, it was nice to meet you in person.
Was I Aki, though? Was I looking Aki at all?
I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
Like, let me get a bacon, egg, and cheese the Aki way? Sure.
I have no idea what Aki
was. Did I look like I could have been on the offensive line yesterday for the Patriots, even though I wouldn't have wanted to be?
You might have done a better job than Will Campbell.
I thought he was going to die for Drake May.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what he said.
You were all fired up. By the way, Bada Booms, good job. You texted me before the game about Barner, saying that he was going to have a big game for Seattle. He did. Touchdown for Seattle. Obviously, a few receptions there. So, good job with that. I was trying
to spread the love.
I know. That's okay. But you could have said something on the air on Friday and spread the love for real. That hit you all of a sudden Sunday at, 5 o'clock.
Because I don't think Barner. Like that. I don't think in the gambling mindset.
Well, how did it come up? How did that come up then?
Well, I don't know. I just thought to myself, A.J. Barner. He gets involved in the passing game, and they're going to be locked down on JSN, I figured. So, A.J. Barner.
Well, it was a good call by you, so I'm giving you props. And I know Sam Darnold won, and you're happy. You heard what I said in the open. Don't you feel, though, like it could be – both can be true. You as a Jet fan can be thrilled that Sam Darnold won a Super Bowl and happy that he beat the Patriots in doing so, but also pissed off at your own organization for actually drafting a Super Bowl-winning quarterback, but just not having that quarterback win the Super Bowl with you?
I'm going to answer the question in a moment that happened last night. Can I do that? Do I have permission to do that? Last night, me and my brother, we left my friend's house where we watched the game where they had the Super Bowl party. We go to the gas station just to get a vitamin water and he wanted to get a snack after the game. He had to work. And we're leaving out, and he's pointing at the speaker. He's like, do you hear the song? And I'm like, no, I don't hear the song. I was listening to Bob Booney on the car, just like you. I was feeling the fuel, feeling the, you know what I'm saying? And he's like, listen to the song. And it was Someone Like You by Adele. So I'm dead serious. I didn't tell you this because I wanted to save it. You know the words of that song? I heard you settled down and you... It described what I watched last night. Never mind, I'll find someone like you. I wish nothing but the best for you too, Sam. Don't forgive me in the time we had, but we got to, at the end of the day, I was very happy for Sam. I was in the moment with him. I thought if I see him rain a tear down, maybe one will come down for me. Because it's like, Sam Darnold.
But he didn't win the Super Bowl for your team.
No, I'm getting to that point.
Give it to it.
Correlates with the Adele song. It's great. I'm happy for you. At one point, we had a relationship, but now I got to worry about myself. Where's my prince, knight in shining armor? Where is he even coming, Sal?
But how are you not more embarrassed that happened? To me, now, if it weren't against the Patriots, because that's the caveat here. It's against the Patriots, so I don't care who the quarterback is, what team it is. Jet fans want to see the Patriots lose. A lot of fans want to see the Patriots lose. But how are you not more embarrassed that you identified the quarterback finally, the first one since Joe Willie Namath? The first quarterback you drafted since Joe Willie Namath. That's it. Joe Namath, Sam Darnold, two quarterbacks that the Jets have drafted in their pathetic history that have won a Super Bowl. But he did it somewhere else. That, to me, is like the shots across the bow of the ineptitude of the organization. I'd be annoyed at that watching. This guy is going to win a Super Bowl. Well, we all knew it. We wanted him here, and our idiot organization couldn't turn him into the quarterback that he became elsewhere.
Yeah, obviously it's not the Bada Boom show, but when you were talking there at the beginning, I have this little button right here on the mic that allows me to mute. When I started hearing your narrative, I just turned it all the way down. I'm not trying to think like that, Sal. It's reality. No, it is. I've just sat through so much ineptitude and, beating over the head. And I was doing the plunging emote last time.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. We suck. We're a joke. I love the game of football. I love Sam Darnold. He did nothing to me wrong personally. There's been worse, more embarrassing moments for the Jets. And I failed to mention this last time. Again, not the Bada Boom show, but I want to stick this out in the ether. Sam Darnold is a guy who feeds off of resiliency. His whole story is about being resilient, and he was supposed to be the first overall pick. Instead, they picked Baker. He was supposed to be the Jets' savior. They got rid of him and brought Zach Wilson in. Then he went to, I'm not going to do the whole thing. You heard it yesterday. You saw all the pictures. I don't necessarily think that Sam Darnold is Sam Darnold with the Jets. I think he had to go through all of this, and
that's a Jets problem.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
my point.
No, it is. But he got to work with two great offensive minds, in my humble opinion. I think Kevin O'Connell's one of the best offensive minds in football.
I don't care what he did elsewhere. What I care about is how are they ever going to win? The hardest part is finding the quarterback to draft that can win a Super Bowl. They did that, and they still couldn't win. If you as an organization draft a quarterback that's eventually going to win a Super Bowl, you better make sure it's with you. That's the hardest part. They found that after all the different guys that they've had in here, they found that. And they still couldn't win the Super Bowl with them. Somebody else did. I know why. I don't need you to explain to me why it didn't happen here, why it happened elsewhere. What I want to know is, how would I believe in this team? Why would I believe in this team if they couldn't take him, a guy who had the potential to win a Super Bowl, because clearly he did? How are they going to find somebody else and do it with somebody else? They're not. That's the answer. They're not. Not with Woody Johnson running things. Get the offensive mind. Where is it? Where is the offensive mind? They should have hired John Gruden. They didn't. They brought in Aaron Glenn. And look at what happened there. Like, they are a mess. I know you want to believe, because you're a fan, that it's not that bad, anything can happen. I'm telling you that this was a – if you doubted the Jets to begin with, this is the nail in the coffin. You found the guy. You drafted the right guy. You failed to develop him. They will never develop a franchise quarterback because they can't, because Woody Johnson doesn't know how. He doesn't know how to build the infrastructure. That's my point. That's why I would expect more frustration from you, as opposed to Sam's a nice guy. Exercise the demons. Drake Macy and Ghost. Good for Sam. No, no. I mean, that could be true. Also, the Jets are inept. That should be true.
So, third time I'm saying this, not the Bada Boom show, but you can't bring me that energy and expect me not to want to punch back. Do I have an opportunity to punch back?
Just do it.
Where were you when seeing Ghost happen, Sal?
I was watching the game. What do you mean, where was I?
Yeah, but how did it feel to you when the seeing Ghost thing happened?
Yeah, I felt bad for Sam Darnold.
Yeah, so
I thought the Jets were going to win that game, as a matter of fact. That was the one game. Remember, going in, the expectation was that the Jets could actually beat the Patriots for the first time.
Because the Dallas game. Remember the Dallas game when he threw the bomb to Robbie? That feels like forever ago, but also it was yesterday. There was an emotional release there, and I think if it wasn't the Patriots, it wouldn't be like as happy as, like you're saying, Sam's a good guy. But I just remember my feeling after that game, and when the Pats put up 50 on them, and all those moments, and it was an exercising of demons. I don't know, Sal, if that was Sean Payton and the Broncos, if I'd feel the same way right now. I'd feel more like the other part of the Adele song, and it'd be more somber. For me, I feel the release of, wow, I remember that game. I'm so happy for the kid, because the same way he felt with the seeing Ghost, I probably felt the same exact way, it not being my career,
right?
But the emotional tie that I have to the team and the organization, sadly. But you're the sad part about all of this, Sal, is that you're incredibly right. I just don't want to think like that right now, because I've been beaten, bullied, bruised, kept at my knees with this organization for the last 3 years now. Like I said, I'm happy that football's over. This is the first time in a while where I'm not like, oh no, football's over, we got to wait all this time. Bring on baseball. I'm like, this sport needs a good 6 month rest from me. Like, what one of the worst years of football that I've ever consumed, and it stems from the Jets. But I mean, this season was an absolute zero when you root for this team.
Well, I mean, every year when you root for the Jets, sadly, has been a zero. The majority of teams, or the majority of years. All right, WrestleCon.
Yes.
What'd you think?
Oh, yeah. 80,
it was the first time I've ever been to an experience like that. Like, I've seen it from afar, the tables and the old wrestlers. I've seen pictures of. I've never actually been to one. I wanted to go to see my buddy Brian Myers and figured maybe we'd do some content there, introduce Bada Booms to Brian. So we did that for a little bit, had some fun there. But like overall, man, it was sad to see so many guys that we remember in great shape and your childhood heroes and Royal Rumbles or WrestleManias or Survivor Series, you know, Demolition or the Powers of Pain or Ted DiBiase, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, all these guys, the Mountie. And they just look old, sad, and old. The majority of it was, I think, sad or old. No,
I referenced the film with what's his name, Mickey Rourke. Mickey Rourke,
yeah, the wrestler.
The wrestler,
great movie. Marissa Tomei as well.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Sal. I'm familiar with her whole catalog.
Yes.
Besides that point, it seemed like that. It felt like that. Where like it's just sad. It's like these guys, and I mentioned in the show Heels here. These guys are still chasing it, and they're always going to be chasing it. It was just very, very sad from that perspective. Like, I can tell you had the little bit of giddiness to you. Like, you had the hop in your step. And I was sitting there. I believe there was a point where the Mountie was singing on stage. And to me, I was like, wow, this is all – like, this – I have third-hand embarrassment. Forget second-hand.
That was probably the low point. The Mountie in full costume up there on stage singing to – 100 people. It was just all right. So, but the main point of this conversation, we had some fun doing that, But last week we discussed Connecticut pizza versus New Jersey pizza. It wasn't trying to be a thing. Nobody's trying to be Dave Portnoy. We know he's
dominated.
Can
we shout out
them.
Craig DeGeorge real quick?
Oh yeah, Craig DeGeorge. It was great seeing him.
Such a nice guy. Such a nice guy.
Did you do any research on him? Because you didn't really, we weren't familiar with his work.
I did a little bit, but just the way like he was like having a conversation with both of us, like he knew his role. Like I thought, I don't know if that's rude to say.
But no, but he knew me. So I knew him. I never met him before, but I've known him through social media, and he's in the business like doing broadcasting stuff. So it was easy for me to introduce myself to him. He knew who I was, and then he was talking to us. But yeah, Craig DeGeorge, like he wasn't there a long time, but he was there in 87 and 88. Those are two major, I think he said it was either, yeah, it was 87, 88. Those are two of the biggest years for me in my wrestling fandom. So he had major interviews with Andre or Hogan or Savage or DiBiase. So it was pretty cool to see him and say
such
hello.
A nice guy. I just wanted to shout him out real quick.
Yeah. Okay, for the pizza, we did the pizza stuff last week, just talking about Connecticut versus New Jersey. Stumbled across it by accident. It's not like a thing we're trying to do. It's life. People like pizza. People talk about pizza. You're in Connecticut. I'm in Jersey. And the one spot, now I love a lot of different places in New Jersey, but the one spot that I would put up against any pizza that I've ever had in my life, Third Proof Pizzeria, happens to be right down the block from me. Bada Booms came in. We went for pizza. You, as your Connecticut, you know, you're a Connecticut guy, and we're dismissing the notion of what I was trying to tell you about Third Proof Pizzeria. Give your thoughts on what we had.
I want to just shine light on that. That's a great point, too. That was not a planned bit whatsoever. It was like a throwaway line that we ended up – I mean, that's what we do, Sal. That's what makes us, you know, such a great little tandem here so early on. But getting to that Connecticut pizza point versus New Jersey pizza, it wasn't better than modern. Like this, it's New Haven style they were going for. They're trying to replicate greatness of something else. Very similar to the New England Patriots last night. But I was very impressed, Sal. Very impressed with that za.
You were sleeping on my recommendation. You didn't think it was going to be anywhere close to what it was.
That text that you sent me Saturday night, like I wanted to send that to you. But I was like, ah, that's going to get used against me, so I'm not going to. I was sitting there thinking like, damn, I could use another slice or two.
It was that good. So
you hogging it. Like you were even asking me like, what? What's
I didn't know how many slices
here?
Were left. Yeah, I know. Well, we were supposed to go 4-4, but I don't know if I got to 5. But
you're like a
so.
Vacuum.
Oh, dude, with pizza? Are you kidding me? And that pizza, it was delicious. Anyway, all right. So
just sucking it down.
So you enjoyed the pizza. That's the point.
I thought it was great. I kind of wish that we touched that other one that you were talking about, that hot, what was it? What was it called?
Hot Roni. You were afraid to have the Hot Roni. I told you we could have gotten both. I wanted you to try that one because I think that one's even better. But if you're just doing like pound for pound, you want to just get there, you know, New Haven style or one of their plain pizzas, so to speak, that's the one to go to. But the Hot Honey Roni is even better. It's on par. The best pizza I've ever had in my life was DeFaria. Have you ever had that in Brooklyn?
No, DeFaria, it sounds like a Disney villain.
No, it was the best pizza that I've ever had. It's up there. DeFaria. That was when the old man was
It's in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
You know where by? Is it by Cheapside Bay?
I don't know. I would say that Brooklyn pizza is probably the best that I've had, then Jersey. And then maybe Connecticut. Long Island is last. Long Island, there was not a great pizza spot.
There's nothing special.
I love Little Vincent's. I love Little Vincent's, but I've already had 3 or 4 pizza places that bury them in Jersey. So I wouldn't put Long Island on the list.
Can I ask you about that Hot Honey Roni real quick?
Yeah.
Is that's what it's called, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Is the style similar or is it like doughy? Like, is it similar to the one we had?
No, similar style.
Okay, because like if it's like that, just with toppings, oh, that pizza style. The sauce was a little bit too sweet for me. I'm very big on, I hate the sweet sauce. Like, and this, again, this is not trying to be Portnoy. This is just me being a full-blooded Italian. Like, if I have pasta and the sauce is like, I'm getting a little sweetness thrown out. I want nothing to do with it.
All right, Bada Booms. There you have it. So it was nice to meet you in person over the weekend. Little 80s wrestling con. And then some Third Proof Pizzeria, which was delicious. All right, we'll be back again tomorrow. Another episode as we start to now transition. Obviously, the football season is over. Look ahead to baseball. Something about the Yankees that happened over the weekend that I want to get to tomorrow. We'll discuss that then. Remember, download, rate, subscribe if you like it. If you don't, keep it moving. I don't care. I mean, you do you. But we're available YouTube, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you tomorrow.